All right, everybody. You are listening to Man v. Mob Radio. It's 7 o'clock right now. I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin, and this is 91.5 FM WMFO Medford, Tufts Freeform Radio. My in-studio guest tonight, he's been here a couple times before, so he's a pro by now, Chris. So thank you again, Chris.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And look at that. Your mic works. That's pretty much never happened before.
You're a pro. You're here more than me.
Week 2 in 2020, I got the mics to work first time, so that's major progress. All right, so I don't really have a serious lineup for tonight. I kind of came into this not knowing, thinking we could wing it a little bit. I wrote a couple little notes down on a note card next to me.
Texted me today and said you want a radio tonight, which leads me to believe you did not have a prep sheet.
Yeah, I mean, this is like a crib note. Hardly, really. Before I forget, because I always do, the studio line is 855-915-9636. Once again, 855-915-9636. And that's for if you have a comment, if you have a question, if you want to make a recommendation, anything, if you just want to get something off your mind. So please call in. I enjoy having conversations with in-studio guests and out-of-studio guests. So, you know what? I'll give it to you one more time. 855-915-9636. And if you can't remember those last four digits, it's WMFO, which is the studio. All right, Chris. So, the first thing that I was going to bring up.
Yes.
Were you ever a fan of Howard Stern?
No. I was always an Opie and Anthony guy.
Okay.
I never really jumped into the Stern world. Ron and Fez is probably my favorite thing that's ever been put on the radio.
Wait a second. What is Ron and Fez? I feel like an idiot.
It's a radio show. It's a radio show that ran on SiriusXM back in the early days of it.
Pre-Stern?
No, they ran side by side together. They were actually on the same station back at WNEW together when they first moved to New York from Florida. And I don't want to get too deep into it because it's a whole world. You kind of have to know the cast of characters and all that. But
I gotcha.
It's
did they get crushed by Stern?
No. They're always very comfortable in their standings. One of the characters, Fez, on the show, had a little bit of a mental breakdown as the years went on. And
on the air? Or?
Oh, yeah, dude. Boy. It's a fascinating case study in just people and human nature. But in 2014, Fez retired and moved back to Florida, and the show ceased from there.
Interesting. So we've known each other for quite some time. Can you think of anybody that we mutually know who I could bring on from time to time so we can record their gradual mental breakdown? Don't actually answer that.
Your name just came.
I do need to find somebody to gradually break down over time.
I can think of a person who I think we watched a gradual breakdown over time.
We're gonna have to talk about after the fact.
Okay.
Maybe you can share a detail without sharing a name, because I am curious.
They used to sit with us at the table. I believe they went on to become a doctor or a dentist right now. They were balding by 14.
Wow. Okay. I know exactly who you're talking about. Yeah. No kidding. All right. good descriptions. Okay. So with the Howard Stern thing, I bring that up because I recently read the Howard Stern Comes Again book, which is the interview book that he put together. And I thought it was pretty entertaining because he talks about at the beginning how Simon and Schuster came to him, the publishing company, and said, we want you to make a third book. And he said, no way. And they said, well, why don't you just sit with the editor-in-chief or something like that.
I didn't know he had three. I knew he had
two
parts
previous books.
I don't know the other one.
I don't either, to be honest with you. And so Howard went, yeah, why not? Sat down with the guy, and the guy said, look, here you go. Put a book down on the table. It was, 25 of Howard's best interviews determined by this guy or his publishing company. And he said, you don't have to do anything. Just sign off on this, and then you'll get your cut. So Howard's like, this is incredible. I don't have to do anything. This is awesome. And of course I'll do it. So he brought a copy home. And soon after that, he realized, wait a second. Oh, but these aren't really my best interviews. And I probably want to introduce all these interviews individually and write something about them. So gradually it just became his project. And 2 years later, he released this book. I was like, you know what? That was a really brilliant tactic by the publishing company.
I was just thinking the same thing, unless they didn't know it was going to happen that way. If this guy wrote this whole thing and Stern was just like...
Yeah, I don't know for sure, but I suspect that there was some tactic in there where they just chose random interviews and they're like, he's not going to agree with this. But anyway, hands down, favorite interview was with Bill O'Reilly. It was hilariously awkward. It was in the early 2000s, and it was just incredible.
Is that when Artie Lang's on there, or Billy West is?
I don't remember. There was maybe one or two interjections by somebody else in the studio.
Guy, yeah.
And it was probably Artie Lang.
Yeah, I think Billy West was the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Because he went there right after he left Boston. But before he got Ren and Stimpy.
I don't really know him too well, so but I think I would remember seeing his name in there. Anyway, so I will say that Bill O'Reilly was, like Howard was asking him very sexually aggressive questions, and Bill O'Reilly was like a complete square, kind of as you'd imagine.
Right.
And it was the seeing those two people together having a conversation was truly an incredible thing. I loved it. So
Letterman did the same thing with O'Reilly. They do an interview where I think he calls him a boob at one point. He says, "I just think you're a boob. I don't think you believe what you're actually saying."
Yeah, I remember him actually saying that. I remember that clip of Letterman. Another interesting interview, and Howard said I hesitated to put this in there, into this book, was with Harvey Weinstein. And that was kind of creepy because you read it with the hindsight, and Howard asks him directly about the casting couch, and he says, "So, you know, this doesn't really go on in Hollywood, or is this, come on, producer, you're a producer, you're getting laid all the time, right?" And Harvey's like, "Oh, no, no, Howard, you know that's not how it works. Like, anybody exploiting their power like that would be," I'm very much paraphrasing, but he knew exactly what to say and when to say it, and was talking about how great Julia Roberts and Meryl Streep were and how much he respected them and all this stuff. And, man, looking back and reading all that, you just get kind of like a shiver.
I wonder if he asked him specifically because of some scuttlebutt he had heard. Because he's interviewed producers before. He doesn't ask every producer.
Yeah, I think it was because he had heard a rumor at the time. But this was maybe like 2013 or 2014. So it was a couple years away from the big reveal.
The big reveal.
Well, I'm...
The big ta-da.
Yeah, the big ta-da. I'm about to read Catch and Kill by Ronan Farrow. So I'm looking forward to finding out how that happened. But
is that what the book's about?
Yeah. Because I guess Ronan Farrow was the one who first got tipped off.
He broke the story. And then
he broke the story, yeah.
Yeah, they tried to silence him, however they do it. I don't know the details, but...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm on a big whistleblower kick right now. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but I read the Snowden book, Permanent Record, which was a great book. And then I don't know.
You ever see the movie Serpico? Or read anything about
Serpico.
Frank Serpico?
Oh, yeah, with it's the Pacino one where he's playing a cop, and he's like the only straight cop in a crooked agency, and yeah. During a St. Paddy's Day parade sophomore year of college, I somehow made it into the lobby of the police station in Southie and was yelling Serpico. I don't know why, but that just stands in my mind as a memory related to Serpico.
What? How did you get... How'd you get into the station? What led to this?
I think that was the public restroom for Southie during the parade, which was a really foolish choice. Although,
the parade, you can knock on anyone's door. They'll let you in. They're all having parties.
That's true. But when you've been drinking, you don't really make the most logical decisions.
Clearly not. You wound up in a police station yelling Serpico.
Exactly. But at the same time, now that I think about it from the police perspective, it's kind of brilliant. Because is it easier to arrest somebody than if they're in your lobby doing dumb stuff? I don't think so. You don't have to go anywhere. You just go, all right, all these people, they're coming to us. We just walk out into the lobby, throw the cuffs on.
You think it's a sting operation?
Sting operation, exactly.
Yep. I'm trapping you.
That's smart. And I also recall a couple having sex behind a dumpster, but I don't remember. It's one of those like false memories. I don't remember if I actually saw it or if I heard about it. So
I would think that you could be able to tell the difference.
Yeah. And I like how I refer to them as a couple, like they were romantically engaged. Probably not.
Oh, they could still be together now.
They could be. That was their first date.
Yeah, I was just going to say, go to date night at that dumpster, find Hojo's.
Exactly, yeah. Okay, so anyway, tangent off a tangent. Whistleblowers, for whatever reason, I just got into those recently, and that's led me down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, the Glenn Greenwalds and everything else. Chelsea Manning.
Oh, yeah, I don't know anything about it. Is Glenn Greenwald the drone guy? Did he blow the whistle on drone strikes?
No, that's not what I know. I don't know if that's true or not, so I don't want to say that he isn't, but...
Okay.
I don't think that was him.
What did he blow the whistle on?
I forget. It was some sort of, like, not corruption, but, like, sort of abuse of power in a branch of the military.
Got it.
Who was the, do you ever read the article, the general that ran amok about,
McChrystal?
Is it McChrystal or Petraeus?
Talked to, I thought it was McChrystal who talked to Rolling Stone.
Yes,
about
okay,
Obama,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought it was General Petraeus. Is that who it's about?
No, I'm pretty sure it was McChrystal that, okay, that talked to Rolling Stone. But Petraeus also had a scandal. I think his scandal was that he was sleeping with, like, he was having an affair or sleeping with somebody else, an underling in the some branch of the military. I think there were two different scandals.
Okay.
Yeah. It's tough to follow this. I need a big web connecting everything. I thought about doing that. I've thought about putting a serial killer style web of yarn on my wall in my apartment, just connecting all these ideas and thoughts and things that I learn. And I said, maybe I shouldn't do that.
Are you willing to invest that much in pins, though? Cork boards?
A lot of pins.
There's a lot of pins.
Not really.
Why would you have it connect? I would do that. I would go through the entire trouble of getting one of those and making it look crazy, but I would make it connect to nothing.
Yeah, but I feel like that's a good point. I think it's just one of those things that makes you look kind of... Well, that makes you... It looks smart in a way, but also makes you look very psycho. But
I was going to say, if you have a badge.
If you have a badge.
If you don't
exactly,
have a badge, yeah. You
look psycho. But I was going to say, I kind of associate it with people who draw formulas on windows. You know?
Yeah.
If you have any opportunity to do that, you will impress people. Even if you don't know how to write a formula, even if you just know some random...
You know parentheses and numbers?
Yeah.
A couple of letters.
A couple variables. Somebody was... I don't remember who it was. They were trying to explain math to me the other day. Or they... Not explain it to me, but they were trying to talk about how students have to learn math. And they were like, what is this stuff with the... Like, a V can't be a number and W and X and all this. I was like, oh boy.
Were you talking to an angsty 14-year-old?
No, this was an adult. This was... I guess that they didn't agree with variables.
Who can blame them?
I mean, they started off on a high note with they started making sense, and then they just kind of went down into how math is taught and how letters can't be numbers. It was a rapid decline. Okay, so the movie 1917, I saw that this weekend. Do you know that movie?
Is that the one about Churchill?
Not at all.
Okay, I don't know.
But it's the World War I one.
All right.
Really good movie. Although, to be honest with you, a bit of a downer.
I'd imagine.
Yeah. Great movie. Good cinematography.
Who is it?
I think it was the guy that directed Skyfall.
Oh, all right.
Which means nothing to me. Yeah, I mean, I didn't really particularly enjoy Skyfall. It was all right. But... Yeah, I know next to nothing about movies. I learn that when I talk with people who are really into movies and who appreciate them for, like, you know, editing and cinematography and stuff like that. But I will say that I have started to notice cinematography and, like, set pieces and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And this was quite impressive. It was almost like a Lord of the Rings movie.
Do you see that Joker movie's nominated for 11 Oscars?
That's crazy.
That
actually
is, that
1917
is
the is the other one. It's like 10 Oscars or yeah, so Joker's 11, 1917 is 10. It's like, that's nuts.
Did you see the Joker movie?
I did. Yeah. I really enjoyed it. What did you think? You thought it was meh?
It's a movie. It's an okay movie. It's also have you ever seen The King of Comedy with De Niro?
And
Jerry Lewis?
No.
It is exactly The King of Comedy but with violence. So I just I know it's supposed
I
to be paying homage
that.
To that in Taxi Driver, but it's...
Oh, yeah. Okay. I did hear about that.
When you play homage, you're supposed to change things, and it just... That's one of my favorite movies of all time. If I ever met De Niro, I would only want to talk to him about Rupert Pupkin in The King of Comedy. So to
Rupert
watch,
Pupkin.
To watch it played out poorly and violently, I didn't find it to be that great of a movie.
You probably saw it too late as well, where the hype had gotten built up to a point where it was no longer worth...
Your
expectations were only going to be dashed against the rocks.
Not really. I'm not a superhero guy anyway, so the hype wouldn't have meant anything to me, but...
Oh, neither am I. I just mean... And everybody starts
movie,
to say, oh, this is the best movie ever, and it was kind of the sleeper hit, and you go in saying, oh, whoa, this is probably fantastic if everybody's saying this about a superhero movie, and all these people who don't like superhero movies are saying this is great, and...
Is it Joaquin who's playing?
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix.
He does a hell of a job. He acts his tail off the whole time.
He does. I thought it was very well acted on his part, and then, I don't really remember anybody else.
I don't think there are any other big...
De Niro. That's the only other name.
Oh, yeah.
He was... All right.
Murray Franklin.
I did like, my favorite part was the Murray. I just like how he says Murray. Okay. So not much on 1917, but, oh, okay. I don't know if listeners are really going to understand this, but I think you and I would be able to relate or talk about it for a minute or two.
We're smarter than them, I know what you're saying.
Yeah, way smarter. Yeah. No, but just I think that we are just familiar with this topic from prior conversations that we've had. So with Jordan Peterson, he has that personality class. Have you seen that? No. Heard about it? Have you seen this? Have you heard about this? okay, so he maybe... well, that's Leno, but then it's also Jimmy Vollmer from South Park, and I think it took me a while to realize that Jimmy was based off of Leno's line.
Leno does the voice of Cartman's cat on South Park. Do you know that?
I did not know that.
All of the actual meows is Jay Leno.
Yeah, I remember early on they did hire. Apparently, the turkey was Jerry Seinfeld.
Oh wow! In
one Thanksgiving episode back in 1997 or something like that. Yeah, they used to do that. They used to bring on guest cameos for dumb stuff. I do recall that, but I didn't know that Jay Leno was the cat. All right, so Jordan Peterson has these online lectures. It's about 8 videos based on the Big 5 personality assessment, which is, from what I understand, the most agreed upon assessment of personality out there. I think a lot of companies have formerly used Myers-Briggs, mm-hmm. and that has been largely discredited, not just from that Adam Ruins Everything guy, but from all types of scientists and psychologists and stuff like that. So I guess the Big 5 is the current model. And yeah, Peterson has an episode based on each of the there are 5 main factors, and each one has 2 facets or 2 sub-elements to it. And so it'll be like neuroticism will be the main factor, and then sub-traits will be, I don't think this is the actual one, but it's like anxiety and volatility or something like that.
Okay.
And so you can take, it really helps if you start off by taking an assessment of yourself. There's a long questionnaire, maybe 100 questions or something like that. And then you find out where you rank in all of these categories based on the percentile. So if you get in the 1 percentile, that means that out of 100 people, 99 people are going to be more extreme in that trait. So it really helps, this class really helps you to understand yourself. It really helps you to understand other people. And let me give a specific example, because this is kind of hard to follow so far.
You took it, not to interrupt, but you took
it. I did okay. Many months back, I took the Big 5 personality test, but then I didn't really have any additional... Each of the results has an explanation, but I didn't have any lectures or further explanation to learn from.
Okay.
So this was a really good supplement. And... one of the lectures specifically is about personality differences between men and women, which was fascinating. Another one was personality differences between liberals and conservatives, and I really like that one. And he talks about how trait orderliness is like an extreme predictor of, there were 2 traits. One of them was tended to be higher in liberals, the other in conservatives. Liberals were higher what's the term when you're sympathetic or it's like higher in empathy, higher in compassion. Liberals are higher in compassion, and conservatives are higher in politeness. So I thought that was interesting. And conservatives are also higher in orderliness. And he talks about he uses an example taken to the extreme of how if you're extremely orderly, you tend to create a lot of borders and boundaries,
mm-hmm.
and that is to prevent historically the spread of pathogens. So there was a real purpose to that. You think about like the wall, for example, down on the border, and how this applies to populations and nativism and things like that. A lot of the origin of this is preventing pathogens from spreading, germs, all that. And he talks about how today there really is like a absolutely necessary it's really necessary to have liberals and conservatives, because liberals are the ones that generate new ideas and conservatives are the ones that implement them. So if you don't have one, then no new ideas get generated, and the conservatives would just auger in infinitely, unidirectionally, and that's stagnation, basically.
Well,
but
they,
if you don't have the conservatives, then nothing ever gets implemented. So I thought that was really interesting.
They also have a higher, the cingulate gyrus that emphasizes pattern and routine more, which they find to be stronger in people that are more conservative?
Yeah, there were different parts of the brain that were reflected in these differences, I do recall.
Okay.
So I just thought that was a really enlightening series of lectures, and it does get fairly dense.
Now, does he go into why we need the Green Party?
He does not bring up the Green Party.
No one ever does.
somebody did bring up the Green Party recently. The Green Party, and then isn't the other one the Libertarian? No, the Green Rainbow Party, which doesn't make any sense. What is a green rainbow? Various shades of green?
Are those gay environmentalists? I don't know.
That's a good point. It might be. Green Rainbow Party, gay environmentalists.
Or the Reform Party, Ross Perot's?
Oh, yeah. Thing? That's probably gone or got merged into something. But then there's the Libertarian Party, and I don't know anything really about them, but I know that Big L Libertarian Party is kind of a cluster F.
Yeah, it seems, I'm very apolitical, I don't know any of this, but from what I see, it seems like they're always fighting with each other.
Yeah.
I don't necessarily know what they stand for.
I don't think that they do have a common, I mean, isn't that the nature of, like, isn't that the hilarious nature of trying to have a movement of individualists? It's like trying to herd cats, literally, right? I don't even see how you could have a common, I mean, once you get past maybe 10 people, wouldn't it just explode every time into chaos?
Unless you had one person that could be a mouthpiece for all of that. They can listen to all these individual people and kind of narrow down what the important points to make of that topic is.
I guess.
But
I guess Gary Johnson wasn't that person. yeah. Good luck to the Libertarians in future. Herman Cain?
999. That's what I vote for every year.
What? Is Herman Cain the pizza guy? Godfather Pizza?
Yeah, he was the, I think it was, yeah. Yeah, because he was the head of the NRA, National Restaurant Association.
Wait a second. Is that a real thing?
Yeah.
There's a second NRA that's National Restaurant
Association? National Restaurant Association. Do you not remember the whole Herman Cain, whatever election that
All
was?
All I remember was Shucky Ducky.
Yeah.
Shucky Ducky. Shucky Ducky. no, I have no idea any of this stuff. So he was the head of the NRA, and did people get all upset about that and then found out that it was just a restaurant? That must have been used to troll so many people.
I don't think anyone cared, to be honest. He wasn't like he was a contender anyway. He was just kind of there for comedic value, but...
Yeah. Although I do remember some people switching over to the Herman Cain ticket. I don't think that was a very inspiring season. that was the Newt Gingrich era. Now I remember. Yeah, because he was like the front runner. Anyway.
Newt, ugh.
Let's not go down that hole of trying to recall the 2012 presidential field. did you see the Political Compass thing? Or have you ever heard of the Deadly Isms?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I haven't seen this Political Compass, though.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, Deadly Isms, which is Matt Kibbe, I think.
Yep.
Those were fascinating to me. This is a series of YouTube videos, mm-hmm. and he just talks about all these different movements, basically anything that ends in an ism, and how it's eventually becomes corrupt at a certain point. I thought that was really cool. I thought those were great videos. And the reason I bring that up is because it relates to the Political Compass. I really think that people are breaking out of their old mental models, these stagnant ideas of people and how the world works, and that whole linear left-right, you're either left, you're either, extreme communist or a Nazi or mm-hmm. something like that. I think that we're kind of exiting that paradigm. I mean, a lot of people are still going to obviously try to stick to that, but adding another axis of authoritarian libertarian, like Matt Kibbe was talking about in that series, where you have a social axis and an economic axis. I mean, that might not cover everything, but it makes a hell of a lot more sense than having one thing that you rank everybody on. Because everybody assumes that just because somebody has the label of left or the label of right, that they're similar to each other.
I can understand why people do it, and I understand why it exists practically mm-hmm. as well, but I find it so childish that anyone can say that I'm this or that. Like,
yeah.
Don't you feel there'd be more power and knowledge in being above politics and going, rah-rah, my team, rah-rah, blue, rah-rah, red?
Yeah. I think that people just degenerate to the lowest common denominator, though, unfortunately.
And I don't mean this to be, you know, particularly
like cocky or something.
Yeah, yeah, that's certainly not what I want to do. Mm-hmm. Like I just said, I'm apolitical. But don't you feel like you're smarter than politics and people that get into politics? People that get up yelling and screaming, or you see something on TV and you go,
Yeah, I mean, like,
but you're above this. What are you doing?
If you try to, I think, introduce any type of nuance, then you're probably engaging at a higher level with the information. You can probably synthesize information better. And this is what fascinates me. I'm always thinking about this, and I don't have answers to it, but I'm just, and that's partly, I guess, the curse of being academic. Mm-hmm. Is people are like, okay, you're sort of just useless mental masturbator. But, you know, like I really think about how we have this age of information that we're in, and we're just being bombarded with information. Everybody is. Some people are better equipped to handle that, and they can synthesize that information into how they view the world and start to kind of like mellow out a bit more, realizing that there's no absolute. And then other people, I don't even know. I don't know if they just ignore it all or if they retreat deeper into their previous perception of reality. Or, I mean, because I really do think that, yeah, like the whole MAGA thing, like I get there are legitimate reasons. And you sound, I guess, elitist when you try to argue what's legitimate and what isn't. But there lots of reasons that I can see, you know, immigration reasons and economic reasons and whatnot, that you would vote Donald Trump in the 2016 election. And but then there's also this idea of like, make America great again. Let's go back to a time that probably only existed in somebody's head. You know what I mean? Like I think it existed. That whole vision that people have of going back to a thing, they don't realize that that was not an external reality. It was the perception of their youth and naivete in their head at the time.
So leave it to Beaver episode.
It is.
The fond things you're going to remember.
Yeah, but it's like the idea that you can just like bring back this external reality. Even if we did bring back that exact same external reality, you now have all of the wisdom and new perspective that you've theoretically gained in the intervening years, right? So you would see it through an entirely new lens. I compare it to going back to Disney World as an adult.
Well, from a socially speaking, though, even if we were to bring it back to that period, but we'll just pick a year, whatever it may be, that it's irrelevant. Society and attitudes and the world are so much different.
Yeah.
You're kind of forced to live in the world that you're in right now because it's the only one that fits the situation at hand.
Exactly. And I think people maybe are starting to realize more, and I think I might be falsely attributing some of my own realizations on greater society. I know that some people are kind of on the same wavelength, but maybe people are starting to realize that society is always changing and evolving, and that there's no, like, when you grow up, you get the impression that the status quo of when you were growing up was like the state of the world for time immemorial. But I was also thinking the other day how, and I get such a kick out of this, how, you know, a lot of people might be like, oh, you know, Silicon Valley, bunch of very arrogant elitists getting together, maybe pointy-headed liberals, opinionated, kind of cloistering themselves off and making decisions for the whole country. Like, who the hell do they think they are? And oftentimes it's conservative types, obviously, that have that opinion. And some of that is very justifiable, because these are very important decisions that are being made right now by unelected people, right? But is this not the same thing that existed 250 or 270 or whatever years ago in Philadelphia? The Philadelphia Convention that met to delegate the Constitution was a bunch of pointy-headed liberal intellectuals that got together unelected and set the course for 270 years.
Well, not only that, they had more pull. Like, at least nowadays, people know someone in Tacoma. They didn't care about it.
Yeah.
People in Milwaukee are mad at you. well, cool, it'll take me 6 days by horse to get there. I'm not gonna, who cares if they're upset?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it's strange because there might be a conservative pushback to like Silicon Valley, but it's interesting because conservatives staunchly defend the results of that convention from 270 years ago, that former liberal gathering of minds. And it goes back to the Peterson thing. Liberals are the creators, conservatives are the implementers and defenders. They need something to conserve. Any point in history, it's all relative as to what's being conserved, right?
Right.
So whatever comes of this new, like, I don't even know what you call it, wellspring of ideas that we're living in right now, this new sort of constitutional convention, so to speak, of technology, whatever comes of this, I'm sure is going to be staunchly defended by the new conservatives. It's very interesting.
Well, there's always somebody benefiting from the status quo.
Yeah.
There'll always be someone against it, I guess. The change of it.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was maybe a bit too deep for the middle of a radio program.
Yeah, that's the point of the show. We're talking. People can call in and let us know.
Oh, yeah. So the number for people listening is 855-915-9636. Once again, 855-915-9636. And I should mention again that you are listening to Man v. Mob Radio, and I'm your host, Patrick Clerkin. My in-studio guest has been Chris. He's been in a couple times before, and he's always a really good sport and puts up with random thoughts that I have, so thank you.
Pat, did you say that number again was 855-915-9634?
36.
It was...
Of course.
855-915-9636.
Yes.
Perfect. I just wanted to double check that.
Absolutely. WMFO.
That's what it spells at the last four, if you can't Absolutely. Remember.
If you can't remember WMFO, then you're basically screwed. So
you don't know where you are right now if you don't know WMFO.
Okay. So
I see that you have small topics there on your prep sheet.
Do you have a topic that you want to bring up?
Yeah, I want to bring this up.
I'm hogging this.
Yeah, it's your show. I read this yesterday, and it took me by surprise. The town of St. Agatha's, Maine. Do you know that town?
Hmm.
No one does. It's way
up. I might have. You didn't really let me.
All right, well, tell me. Tell me about St. Agatha.
No, I do not.
What county is it?
Augusta.
That's not even... You know the town motto of Augusta?
I don't even know what it was built based off of. Washington, D.C.
No, just like the motto of the town.
Motto.
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you said model.
No.
I was like, what was it modeled off of? In Maine, we trust?
No, it's a... Why isn't Portland the capital? You can always tell that to a local in Augusta and they'll smile politely at you. But the town of St. Agatha, Maine, is up in very far north. It's about a town or two away from Canada, right by Frenchville and Madawaska. There's about 747 people that live there year-round. It's a very rural and isolated part of the state, part of the country. And a gentleman, I guess, had moved up there 5 months ago and had started squatting in this Civil War era home and has been encouraging people through social media to come up and join his group. He insists that it's not a cult, although his organization is called Changing Culture, with C-U-L-T, all capital, which has freaked out the locals.
Oh, the rest of it? Are you serious?
I'm dead serious, yeah. And
the rest of it's lowercase, and he just capitalized cult, and he says, I'm not a cult?
Yes. And
well, that's subliminal. Who could ever make that mistake?
his goal right now is that he wants to get 150 new people to move to this town, and they're going to change it for the better. It's always very vague as to what that means. It's a lot of things like that. Mm-hmm. The demographics of that entire part of Maine, let alone that state, it's a lot of people 65 and older. It's a lot of Canadians. It's not a very... Like, it's not a place where young people are going to go and there'll be a big call to arms. Just to get there, we'd have to drive like 9 hours.
Unless a microbrewery gets put there or a gastropub. In which case, they're screwed.
Up in the county, they got Allagash, they got all of those, and still no one's helping.
Okay, there you go.
But yeah, so the locals are all freaked out about this guy, insisting that he's going to start a cult. He's had two different people, one from California, one from the Carolinas, move up there with their family, and they're living with him rent-free as well in this house. They're really trying to get him on squatting rights, the squatting issues. Because technically he hasn't done anything wrong legally besides squat. But he's really freaking out the people in the town. They closed the schools down last week for fear of a threat that he was making on social media about blowing up a school.
Did this make big news, or was this kind of a lower tier thing?
It might be big news in Maine.
Okay.
But no, probably not.
That's crazy.
I think I'm fascinated by the story. I'm completely fascinated by it. And there's very little information on it right now. The man supposedly had a stroke Sunday morning at 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Yet he was giving an interview at 10 in the morning on Sunday to the local paper and seemed fine, they said. So it's a lot of...
How old's this guy?
He's probably in his late 30s, maybe.
Okay.
He used to be
a David Koresh. Does he have long, luscious locks?
He's got a kind of gentle eyes.
Gentle eyes. Okay, gentle by the eyes way, I'm making references that people might not know. So David Koresh was the leader of the Branch Davidians in Waco, which got burnt down in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Janet Reno went there and lit the fire. You heard it here first.
I thought they just used her as the battering ram.
Yeah, absolutely. Her
I forgot what I was gonna.
That's all right.
Yeah, but that's what's happening right now in
story.
Saint Agatha, and
I bet a lot of eyes are on that. By the way,
I don't. You know what? I think there's a lot of
rural eyes, just like with. Did you ever hear the story of Ruby Ridge? I'm not going to explain the story of Ruby Ridge.
Okay.
I forget who I've talked with that about. But yeah, I mean, like with Ruby Ridge, also back in the 90s, it was a bunch of rural communities that were like really all eyes on the government. Like, we're going to see what they're going to do. And kind of creepy self-fulfilling prophecy occurred. So I'm curious. I bet that's the same thing that's happening now.
Well, you know what? You mentioned Koresh. And a lot of the videos have been pulled down in the past week. But I was fascinated by this. So I've been looking into it as much as I can. And I have to say, the guy doesn't seem threatening. At least to me, he doesn't seem threatening. He seems a little off his rocker.
Yeah.
But harmless. That could be the worst attitude to have about it. And then you don't know what's going to happen until something actually does snap. Mm-hmm. He does have a very long rap sheet of arrests, mostly for breaking and entering.
Sure.
He was a very bad alcoholic at one point in his life and has a couple of assaults. All of those seem to be about 20 years.
Man, I don't know.
But I'm fascinated by this. But I'm fascinated by small rural towns, particularly forgotten towns of the country.
Sure.
And when something like this happens in one of them, and the population itself is either too old or underfunded to really do anything.
Yeah.
I find it so fascinating.
It's like a frontier town again, probably.
I don't know if you've ever been to Aroostook County, but it is.
No.
Beautiful, yeah, it's just rural.
Whatever happened to those guys? Were they farmers out in Oregon who locked themselves in a Federal Reserve building, but like an agricultural building or something like that? Didn't they have a shootout with the police?
Did they have a shootout or did they just have a standoff?
I think it was actually shots fired. Standoff, yeah. I think it was a standoff.
I think that they
one guy
arrested.
Got shot or something like that.
I think they were arrested. Well, they would have been arrested federally then.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't want to speak out of turn, but I do remember the story.
Yeah, this is up. I mean, I would not know what to do in that situation if I was the whoever deals with that. I guess it's usually attorney general if it ends up federal level. So, yeah, I mean, do you let the people who have guns stockpiled and are clearly looking like they're considering doing something potentially? Like, I don't know. Do you start in a preemptive move in that case? Because then it just becomes self-fulfilling prophecy.
Well, that's why you have to have so much. It would take them years to get an actual enough case to go in with warrants and do everything. I mean, how long did it take them to go into Waco? How long were they watching that before they had to jump in?
I don't know if Waco trouble. Was the show Waco with, what's the guy's name, Taylor Kish? Kitch? The guy from Battleship, that dumb movie, and he was also in True Detective. The Rihanna movie. And and he was in the second season of True Detective. Anyway, that guy played David Koresh, and John Leguizamo played an FBI agent, and
I liked him better in the guy. Soup commercials.
John Leguizamo is kind of annoying, but he's entertaining too. I remember he played one of the Super Mario Brothers in the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Oh, that movie is... Oh, that is
not
a bad...
good.
Have you seen the TV show with Captain Lou Albano? Oh, that's even... That's campy. That's so bad that it's kind of campy and fun. But yeah, that Disney movie was rough.
Was Super Mario Brothers Disney?
I remember seeing it on the Disney Channel a kid. I probably wasn't Disney now that I say that, but...
I bet it's locked deep in a vault now. I mean, you don't want anybody seeing that again. That was an abysmal movie. Modern Disney chugging out or churning out Marvel and Star Wars, and like that's like when you've become famous and you and somebody stumbles across your old yearbook photo or something like that, you just gotta keep that under lock and key. Nobody ever finds it.
Or when you find like your old yearbook and you have your quote, and
forget
what you quoted for your, and you go,
I'm sure I was such a prick with what I wrote. Yeah, I know. I was like, I know it was. I'm gonna find it later and look. I'll let you know what you wrote too.
Oh, I know. I know what I wrote. Oh, that's why I was just cringing. But I'll let you look discovered for yourself later.
Sure.
Don't you feel like if you go back to high school, like any random day, not even high school, just that point of your life, and you were to sit in on an hour of conversations you were having with your friends back then, you'd walk away just going, oh my God.
That happens when I listen to a podcast from last week. You know what I mean? Like anything that I previously said, even if it's recent, I'm like, oh. I think that's just like an affliction that I have. It's not everybody sounds like that. It's just like, for me, how when people hear the sound of their own voice recorded, not coming out of their skull for the first time, where you get all those low frequency vibrations going to your ears. You know how everybody hates the sound of their recorded voice for the first time? That's like specifically me for any content that I've previously generated. I just go back and I'm like, ugh. And now that I have this lovely social media age, what'd you point at?
I'm sorry, it's the Herb Albert Elms.
Oh, okay. Now that we have this lovely social media age that has everything probably going back to high school documented, I'm sure I'll have a great time going back at some point.
I think that's kind of cool. I do think it would be kind of cool as the years go on to have that archive of just some random moment in 2007.
That's true. I'm wondering how it's going to change us. Not you or I, but humans as a people, having your full life documented.
Well, imagine like... you'll have to find a way to kind of scrub it clean. Because imagine a kid, years from now, your kid is... think of the girls that we went to high school with and the photos that they've had up.
Yeah.
I guess even the men at that point as well. But a child can look back and be like, this is my mom at 17.
Yeah.
You know, doing a beer bong and...
I'm curious what the moors are even going to be like at that point. Like if everybody's just going to be like, yeah, whatever. Or if there's going to be a Mexican standoff moment where we all realize we have dirt on each other and everybody puts their guns down.
Well, I think you could do that now.
Yeah, I mean, everybody, this whole political moment that we're in where every person is fearing scandal at any moment. I mean, obviously there's a degree, there's a scale, right, where some things are far worse than others. But in general, there's a whole hell of a lot of... fear and anxiety about nothing, and I think that a lot of that could just kind of be like swept off the table, and everybody
but that's
be like,
not just politics. That's they do that about the weather. They do that about
anybody now.
Brimstone.
Anybody now. It's not just people who are in the political fray, but I mean, particularly if you're like, I only said politics because if you're running for public office, everybody has dirt, pretty much. Particularly if you're somebody of this generation or probably the tail end of X, like a lot of your life exists online.
Dug
up easy.
How many senators and political people this past or last 2019 got caught with blackface in like college yearbooks from the 80s?
Oh yeah,
I mean,
I forgot about those.
Do you remember in Virginia, I think it was the governor and the assistant governor had to step down because they both had different blackface photos.
I guess that was just the thing to do in Virginia at the time. I'm curious if it's still a popular thing and everybody else is just like, oh yeah, those guys are total jerks. And then meanwhile, they're just like scrubbing their photo albums.
I don't like blackface.
Yeah.
I wouldn't do blackface, but it's got to be pretty fun. If all these guys are just wasting all of their careers to...
I'm with you. I mean, like everything is, like I think about Robert Downey Jr. in Tropic Thunder, right? And like, I think that there are different degrees of he was being more like he was going deeper into the role than rather like an obviously like I'm doing this to belittle people. Like he was doing it to like pay homage, I thought. But then there was obviously like other more absurd examples. And Adam Carolla said something pretty entertaining where he talks about how, and you probably heard this bit, he talked about how back in the 80s when he went out trick-or-treating as a kid, he went out as Mr. T and he did blackface. Not like Al Jolson blackface with the big white around the mouth and all that and minstrel stuff, but he went out just as a kid looking like Mr. T with some, I don't know, brown shoe polish or something on. And he's just like, yeah, you know what? If anybody says that I was a racist for doing that when I was 12, you can F off. Like, clearly I loved Mr. T, and Mr. T would probably have no problem with it either.
B.A. Baracus.
And I was like, you know what? This is true, Adam Carolla. This is true.
Do you remember? Do you ever see the photo of Paula Deen's little son that she had dressed up as Ricky Ricardo, and she had him in blackface?
Paula Deen's son. No, I have not seen that. I know that Paula Deen's gotten like deep into some stuff over the last couple of years. Like, do they just keep digging up more stuff on her?
I mean, not that I really know, but there was the one thing. I think the original acquisition was that she's a woman from Georgia who said the N-word 30 years ago.
Yeah.
And then she lost her gig. And then more things just happened to come out. Like, she was hosting a party where she had the black people work as the help. And then there was a photo with her son. She was, remember, she had like a plantation-themed party.
Oh, boy. No, I don't remember the details of that. But, oh, yeah.
That and that was after the firing.
Interesting. Wow, that's bold. I'm thinking of, I don't remember who said it. It was Bill Burr. He was talking about the Duck Dynasty guys.
Oh, yeah.
And when they put the Duck Dynasty guys on camera and they said something homophobic, he's like, what the hell did you think they were going to say? These guys grew up in Louisiana, like, you know, 60 years ago. You think that they're going to spout enlightened, progressive stuff?
The only industry they've had to learn since then is the duck whistle industry.
Yeah, that was such a good point. That might be my favorite Bill Burr joke, second to the one about Arnold Schwarzenegger and Tiger Woods having affairs, where he's saying that the people that go, I would never cheat, I would never cheat. He goes, yeah, you've never been tempted at that level. You never had 20 Swedish bikini models at the 18th hole waiting for you. That's Bill Burr.
Is that Bill Burr? I think Geraldo had a joke about that too when he was alive. About
Greg Geraldo.
Tiger Woods, if your wife really liked shoes, honey, imagine if 20 beautiful shoes were just in your room every night. You wouldn't try one on.
Yeah, I just thought that was a hilariously entertaining perspective that he had, where it's like a lot of the people are like, oh yeah, I'm morally superior, and it's like, put yourself in that exact same situation, and then if you come out of it and don't do what Tiger Woods or Arnold Schwarzenegger did, then you can consider yourself a bit more moral.
Not only that, why would you base your morality off of your moral compass off somebody else that you never meet or talk to? So you didn't cheat on your wife in Milwaukee while you're driving to work every day? Way to go.
I don't know why people do that.
It's not your business what they're doing anyway.
That's generally the case too, yeah. But yeah, I mean, you know, people like to live avatar through other people.
They love dirty laundry.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I don't know why people do what they do. I find it fascinating. It's like, as a case study, to feel like in a different world, I would have been a great sociologist or whoever.
In a different world. You're young and you're broadcasting these sort of ideas and observations now.
But I mean, like, in academia, you know? There's no way I'm going to become a freaking sociologist in academia.
You'd buy a pipe, learn how to tie a bow tie.
That's true.
You'd do it.
That's true. I could do that. That is the starter kit.
Do you know how to tie a regular tie?
Yeah.
Do you know how to tie a bow tie?
One way. Could I do it immediately? Probably not.
Okay.
But why would I? That's the question.
Why would you tie a bow tie?
Tie a bow tie immediately. You need to assess yourself. Can you?
No.
Your eyes right now imply that you can.
No, I cannot tie a bow tie. When I was a wee young lad, I used to wear... It wasn't really my choice, but I used to have bow ties on all the time in family photos, and my cousins used to make fun of me and call me Bow Tie Boy. I don't think that's why I've never learned to tie a bow tie, but I
would be disappointed in my family for ganging up. I would say, you know what? This took balls.
You know what?
You don't have balls. None of you have balls. By the way, the only person who effectively pulled off bow ties was Mr. Putnam. I enjoyed Mr. Putnam wearing bow ties. I thought that was funny, and I thought he was just kind of a, like, F the world kind of guy. I'm wearing a bow tie. I was like, you know what? Mr. Putnam rocks a bow tie. But a lot of people put on the bow tie. I'm like, eh.
I had him freshman year, junior year, and senior year,
mm-hmm.
and I, I liked him a lot. I never understood how people didn't realize he was playing a character, playing some sort of over-exaggerated version.
Yeah.
I never understood when people would take him seriously.
People are very literal.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. It was a very dry exaggeration type of humor, though. And like a British wit, almost. Mm-hmm. And people were not good at picking up on that.
Do you remember his two favorite shows?
Actually, no. All I remember is the Clash poster.
Yeah, the
London
Calling poster. Yeah. He had the Simpsons, and he had the Bonanza map.
He did?
Yeah.
I don't remember him being that into the Simpsons. Okay. It's a new piece of information. So, yeah, I always found it fascinating observing the interaction between him and the other students. Yeah, so, okay. Oh, resolutions. Did you make any for 2020?
Not officially.
Yeah,
probably
declare them.
Well, then why would you ask? Are you just doing a survey?
I don't know. You hesitated a little bit. And I was thinking, you know what?
I didn't officially make something. Like, okay. I wrote it down on a board and was going to make a goal. I guess this year, I kind of want to stop drinking as much as I do, or at least just kind of drink less at one time.
Hmm.
Save money.
That makes sense. Less binge drinking.
Yeah, well, I hate to use that term because it's not like a, you know, a knockdown drunk. But
not like a disorder. It's just a...
yeah, but like, if I have like
a wish.
Four or five cocktails at one bar and we hop to the next bar, I don't need to spend money on another four or five
That's
cocktails.
True.
It's just simple self-control. That and get more hobbies. I need to learn more things and get more hobbies that I want to accomplish.
Anything in mind? Woodworking?
I would love to do woodworking. I do not have the tools to do so right now. I've been trying to learn how to cook a little bit better right now. I'm pretty good at baking.
That's good.
Cooking is completely different to me. I'm trying to figure that out. Fountains. I've gotten really into like tending to fountains.
What? Like you're putting them in the backyard and stuff?
I got them in the house, my man.
The little, is it kind of like a bonsai? You should have a bonsai tree. You should get into that. That's actually a cool hobby. The little clippers and stuff and Zen gardens. And
I'll go with my houseplant hobby and my arrow garden growing hobby.
This is great. Right, you should get into like Japanese wood stuff and bonsais and koi ponds and fountains, and just don't get like that tacky Italian fountain type thing where you have a like Scarface style. I know he's Cuban, but Scarface style, the world is yours. Like, you know what I'm talking about? Like, there's like this, I think it's like Italian-American culture. There's like a lot of like,
flashy.
Very like flashy, tacky stuff.
I like to call it Long Island trash with money.
Yeah, it's like a subgroup of Italian Americans who
like columns and marble.
Yeah,
and
like, that. Like way too much decadent ornamentation. It's like, it's, I don't know. A lot of places that I've seen look like the fall of the Roman Empire or something, or like everybody's trying to invest in columns.
Yeah, but they're passionate people. I like that they live outwardly like that. Being Irish, we don't accessorize or do anything.
Oh, that's the total opposite.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
We turned on Bono for wearing sunglasses.
I know. Irish. Too much expression. Yeah. Can't relate to that.
No. I find it flashy and...
stone-faced. Live in, I don't know, a rock hovel, something like what Patrick the Star would live in. Yeah. That's the way it's... Yeah. Should go back to that. So the last thing that I had on here, and we have like 7 minutes left, is, all right, so there was this documentary on Netflix that I was watching. I watched three
Being
out of...
Being Elmo.
Being Elmo?
Yeah. Was that not it?
That was not it.
Oh.
So that was the guy that played the voice of Elmo?
Yeah. Yeah, I was just being an ass trying to joke around. I'm feeling very interested now in Elmo.
I am actually kind of, I don't think I'd watch that, but people were super into the Mr. Rogers thing, so I'm not really surprised by the Being Elmo. Okay, so this documentary series, 4 episodes, called Unnatural Selection, and it's about people being able to, have you ever heard of CRISPR? It's a DNA editing little molecule or something like that. And it's equivalent to a scalpel. So it goes in and it clips out a piece of the DNA and then it replaces it with a new piece of DNA, the desired piece of DNA. And so they're trying this with species like mosquitoes or ducks or something like that. So you modify the mosquito DNA, have them so that they're malarial resistant, and then you release them out into the population, and then slowly over time it breeds out the malaria mosquitoes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's called gene push, I believe. And so it's extremely controversial because you don't know what the long-term effects are going to be. So anybody that actually advocates for doing this and goes ahead and does it gets all of the ethical, moral ramifications on them. So it's incredibly difficult, and it's heavy as the head that wears the crown of the person, of the scientist doing this stuff. So I feel for them in that regard, and because there's a lot of public backlash. also understandably, these communities. But anyway, so there's this one guy who's very much like I want to say an anarchist, but he's concerned, justifiably, that this type of gene editing technology is going to be commandeered primarily by people with resources and money and power and wealth and all that, and they're going to edit themselves to be even more superior, beautiful, and hyper intelligent and everything. So he wants to democratize this technology. So he is releasing these kits to people in the, like, these mail order kits where people can he's saying everybody has the right to modify themselves, to edit their own genomes. And he was in front of a group of people at a conference about this particular technology. And he said, in this needle, I have this serum that gives you higher strength or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
The guy's just like, one of the people in the audience is like, all right, well, you know, like, put your money where your mouth is. What do you keep talking about this? Like, have you ever even injected yourself with it? He's like, oh, you want me to inject myself with it? And then he did it right there in front of them, injected himself with this stuff. And this is fascinating to me and concerning and everything all wrapped into one. What do you think about that? Do you think people should have the right to edit their own genomes in their homes? That's a heavy question to ask, but...
They absolutely have the right.
Yeah.
But I don't like the idea of that at all.
Yeah.
I don't know why someone else would be comfortable with that idea, unless they do have something physically debilitating that could be fixed.
Well, that's kind of where it starts, is improving people that have a very debilitating thing. And then once you get to that point,
right,
where everybody's
publicly sold, it's not going to be just for...
Yeah, then people are going to start improving themselves beyond the threshold. Exactly.
I think that's very dangerous. I think it's a very dangerous mindset to just think that whatever problem you have, instead of having to develop or work past it, I can just fix it. I can change nature that's already occurred.
Yeah.
I don't have to learn to be funny or a better conversationalist. I can just be taller and look like I do more push-ups.
Yeah. It's kind of like a steroid mentality, right? Where at some point, if you run out of your serum, you're kind of screwed. You're back to square one and potentially even worse. So it kind of reminds me of that guy who... He was featured on Vice and some other things. He's the guy that says everybody should be able to 3D print their own guns.
Oh, yeah, but he ran into some snag of his own.
He did? What was his snag?
He was, like, soliciting sex from a 14-year-old.
Oh.
He was arrested.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Huh.
Which makes
sense. I bet there are a lot of conspiracies surrounding that.
There might be. I don't know.
There's gotta be.
It seemed like it was quite the smoking gun when they caught him.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. I imagine that crushes his credibility.
It probably does. Yeah. Probably does. Okay, so in the interest of not ending on such a heavy note, maybe I should have planned a little bit better. Did you have anything that you wanted to say, any topic that you wanted to bring up, or to read a PSA?
We can read a PSA. Sure. Can I have a shameless plug after that?
Absolutely.
Perfect. Should we give the number out one more time for people to not call the next show?
Absolutely, yeah.
All right. If you're tuning into the next show, you can always not call 855-915-9636. That's 855-915-9636. The last four spelled WMFO.
Great job. We support freedom of choice here. Call, don't call. See?
Yeah, no, you're free to do what you want. We're not going to judge you. We don't even know you. We can't hear you. Pat, you have a computer?
I do.
You do? A personal one?
Yeah.
Holy
Pretty
smokes.
Personal.
Well, if you have a computer with a webcam and you don't use it, why not cover the camera up with a piece of opaque tape? In addition to the government programs, there's plenty of other malware and viruses that can hijack the computer's camera to spy on you. So if you don't use it, consider covering it up. That's a message in the public interest from WMFO in Medford.
Right on. Good bit of advice right out of the Edward Snowden playbook, actually. So wrapping back around.
I got a buddy that has a tape over his phone, the thing on the phone camera on the front.
Yeah.
Because he read something that they that's how they know where to put ads, is they'll follow where people's eyes are the camera.
I don't know if that's true or not.
I don't know if that's true or not either, but I wouldn't put it past anybody.
I had to put a sticker like that on my phone camera when I went to a Chinese factory at my former job. They were very freaked out about
that. Really? That's kind of interesting.